Book of Isaiah, chapter 28, verse 1. Woe to that wreath, the pride of Ephraim, drunkards to the fading flower, his glorious beauty. Set on the head of fertile valley to the city. Pull up the 12 tribes, please. The early one, after they cross over. See, the Lord has one who is powerful and strong, like a hailstorm, a destructive wind, like a driving rain and a flooding downpour. He will throw it forcibly to the ground. Who is Ephraim? He's not one of the 12 sons. He's not one of the 12 original tribes. He had another tribe like him by the name of Manasseh. Ephraim and Manasseh. And they settled. Manasseh was a problem from the start. See the amount of land that Manasseh's got on. I guess I can get up and point to it. Can you bring it down? We get it all. Manasseh?
I can't bring it down. There's no figure.
No, I'm talking about physically move it down. Well, I don't need Asher anyway. So it is. This is the bunch. There you go. Earthquake.
There, now you can point at
it. I know how Skip feels with the vertigo now. A little higher. They got to see you over your head. All right. These three here, they were moving faster at the trial this morning. These three tribes here were the ones after the invasion of Jericho. Said, hey, guys, we like it over here. This land's been settled. We've conquered them. Why should we take all of our family and everybody and move way, way away to what we don't know? Joshua's decision was this. If you send your fighting men and go with the other 9.5 tribes, your families can stay here till the war's over. But you're not going to background and move backwards and take care of the fighting that everybody had to conquer this. So, half of Manasseh, Gad, which is a very small, and Reuben, which is one of the leaders, in my opinion, Reuben, but that number one son, they stayed over. Their men did go over and fight. Ephraim is on this side. They went, and look, if you see Ephraim, Benjamin the baby one, and then, of course, the most important of all was Judah. Later on, Judah actually absorbed the land of Benjamin. Now, they were still Benjaminites, and there were still a lot of problems with them. They were unfaithful a couple of times, but still the land was pretty much, when you hear about Benjamin, later on, you don't hear about Benjamin, you hear about Judah. Now, if you name any, and I can't do it, can't name of four siblings, since I only have three. If you name all the siblings, there is no Ephraim and Manasseh. Who were they, Joe? Do you remember? Ephraim and Manasseh were the sons of Moses. And they were given their own tribes. Whose place did they take? Now, this would be an easy one. You say, well, son of Moses. We got rid of a whole tribe when we took Moses and his family. They took the place of who? Levi, number one. They took the place of Levi. So they were the descendants of Moses. Of course, Moses was the descendant of Levi. He and his brother Aaron were descendants of Levi. So that replaced them. Now, what other of the 12 men is not up there on the board? The woman Manasseh took his place. Huh? Who?
Joseph.
There is no tribe of Joseph. He was absorbed. So that's why we get Manasseh and Ephraim involved in that. Now, Ephraim is in the better place. This is the Jordan River. Okay? Not that far. This is you can't see it there, but there is a mountain range through here. Area that the Good Samaritan found the guy that was beat all up because they were beset by robbers in the mountain range. We would call them in the 1800s the highwaymen or something like that. Vagabonds, mercenaries. What was Quantrill's Raiders called in the Civil War? Thieves and a lot of ugly things. But there's a term where you just go and steal stuff. Huh? I thought you were answering a good, important question. Just seeing your sister. That's okay, Jim. But, huh? So, that's mountain area. So, he was in good, they're in good plains territory. But the problem is, woe to the wreath, the pride of Ephraim's drunkards. You can see right there that they've done gotten off the beaten path. There are six woes in this book. Now, Ephraim was very well elevated up to this time, but they begin to slip away. I was telling Chuck a minute ago, if you follow world politics, I'm going to call it world politics, I really am. A couple weeks ago or so, a British oil tanker was kidnapped, hijacked, if you wish, by a bunch of Iranians who jumped out of helicopters on ropes with machine guns and stole the oil tanker. We said, well, Britain's big enough to go back and get it. No. Britain has 8 frigates to their name, and 4 of them don't work. They have no submarines. They have no battleships. They have no armament. Germany, who used to be, you know, who ruled the world in the 1800s, 1800s and 1900s, Germany and England. Germany has 8 submarines. 4 of them can stay above water, but they can't motivate. They don't have any motors in them, any engines in them. Totally defunct. So that which was once really, really great has become absolutely useless. So when you hear things about the Straits of Hormuz and the oil prices go up, it was amazing last week when that was kidnapped. Oil went up like 20 cents in one day, then it came back down. It's just, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Oil went up more than that. Oil goes up by dollars per barrel. So, woe to the wreath, what was highly looked at, what was appreciated, what was loved of Ephraim. The wreath would be, we do it at church. Remember on the Christmas time when there's 2 big wreaths, one on either side of the front of the church? It's supposed to draw your attention because it looks good. And, you know, and how many of you all have ever seen a funeral wreath? Matter of fact, where I come from, of the many places I've been, a lot of times there'll be a wreath of roses or some type of an evergreen wreath on a casket or on the tombstone. It's to highlight it. Well, the highlight, the wreath of Ephraim was a city called, we just spoke about it, Samaria. It's gone downhill. Samaria was the capital of the northern 10 tribes. But Samaria's problem was, good enough wasn't good enough. And I guess of after looking at your mother and your grandmother and your first wife and your third wife and your great-grandparents and all them Jewish women look alike, I didn't say that. I'm sorry. She's not here. Janet's going to tell on me. And she's not even Jewish, so it doesn't matter. But they looked across the river, and there's all them interesting-looking foreign women, Gentile women, heathen women, if you wish. And usually when you got a heathen woman, you got heathen ways, and they kind of like those heathen ways. And they started, Larry, don't be laughing at me. I'm being nice. And they started intermarrying with those who did not know Jehovah. Well, can we say Solomon and the problems he got himself in with intermarrying with non-Jewish women who knew Jehovah? It became a mess. So before long, the city of Samaria, which had become to the northern 10 tribes the replacement of the place to worship. They said, oh, don't send those people all the way up there, down there to Jerusalem. Let them worship. We'll build our own temple here. And before long, it took the place of Jerusalem, which is contradictory to what God had told them to do. And they got away. So here's what he's talking about, the wreath of Ephraim. It's gone. The important thing, the shining point. They're drunkards. It's a fading flower in our cemetery where my parents are born, were buried. Janet, the 1st of October, they make you take all the flowers you planted off, and you can use artificial flowers. because the real flyers, you know, up north. So anybody ever here live up north? Yes, you have. I know you have. They start freezing and fading and all that kind of stuff, and they're not that pretty anymore. You got stick flyers. We were at a restaurant Saturday morning called Produce 31. I don't know why. And they had about a 7-foot-tall sunflower with one big seed pod at the top, but it had got past being watered, and it was just a stick. It wasn't pretty anymore. It dropped all of its seeds. So Ephraim, it was a fading flower. It had glorious beauty. Set on the head of a fertile valley. It was a right place to be, like a ripe fig before the harvest. As soon as someone sees it and takes it in hand, he swallows it. Well, there was a lot of conflict there. A lot of people charging in and trying to take it. Linda Ronstadt did a song, I'm saying 69, either 68 or 69, when she was with a group called the Stone Pony. Remember that? And it was a song called One Tin Soldier. And everybody wanted the top of this mountain, where supposedly it was beautiful, and they had a secret up there and all that kind of stuff. And they went to war and killed everybody, and they uncovered what the secret word was, and it was love your neighbor. And they died over love your neighbor. Well, that's what was happening to Ephraim. They didn't worship God, and God's not going to put up with it. In that day, verse 5, the Lord Almighty will be a glorious crown, a beautiful wreath for the remnant of his people. He will be the spirit of justice to him who sits in judgment. And we've already told you from the start that Isaiah is a prediction of the coming of Christ. Here is part of it right there. Ephraim's gone, God sending a replacement for the city of Ephraim, for the nation, the tribe of Ephraim. And it's going to be, it's a glorious day, a glorious crown. Have you not sung the song, Crown Him with Many Crowns, the Lord upon His throne? That's what he's getting to right here. So we're getting a prediction of the coming of the Messiah. The Spirit of Justice. Well, we know that Christ will be the judge, and justice will be there. A source of strength to those who turn back to the battle at the gate. As I spoke Sunday from the book of 1 Corinthians, the 6th chapter, I think it was verse 19, such were some of you, Paul said. The Ephraimites have turned, or that group have turned, and they will go back towards God. Now, not all of them will, but the ones who do turn from their sinful ways will be justified and sanctified and saved. Only death do we lose our opportunity for salvation. Now, he did use the word remnant. Now, I know that every time the word remnant is said, Irina just goes cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Because that means she can go down to the fabric store and buy remnants of material and make, what do you call them things? Crossword puzzles. Crossword blankets. What do you call those things you all make? Cross stitch, patch stitch, cross patch. Somebody help me, please. I'm dying up here. Quilts. Patchwork quilts. Thank you very much, Janet. Appreciate that. Well, we think of that as a remnant. It's what's left over from the big bolt. I know that there's a lot of the cheaper carpet stores will advertise remnants. You know, we start out with a 500-foot-long roll. We got the last 25 feet. If it'll fit your room, you're in good shape. Well, the remnant of Israel will be the ones that are still worshiping Jehovah God. And Christ will be strength to those who turn back the battle at the gate. Now, if you read it the way I do, and I hope you do, if you believe the way I do, and that's up to you, the world is in for another great battle. Satan will attack, and his minions, and that's not them funny little people with one eye on TV, minions means followers, will attack God. God will be defended by the archangel who will go to war with his angels. And this will be a great battle. And this time, and finally this time, Satan will be conquered to no more battle against God. And heaven will present itself because Satan has been destroyed. So we go on here. those who turn back the battle at the gate. There, and these also swagger from wine and reel from beer. Don't lose your cool. Don't get out of control. Chuck, what did you tell me? Your grandson was telling you that a bunch of wine pothead winehead friends woke him up in the middle of the night wanting to come steal trash cans. That was the infantry. For you guys, the infantry truck didn't mean anything by that. But normally, if you're stone sober, you're not going to do that. Go around the middle of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning, stealing trash cans on a military base. What are you going to do with them when you steal them? No idea. We're just going to steal trash cans. You know, and about 64, 65, I cannot remember who did it yet, but there used to be a song called "Bottle of Wine, Fruit of the Vine, Won't You Let Me Get Sober? Leave me alone and let me go home." You don't remember that? And you know what I'm talking about. Who did it? Well, it may have been the New Christian Minstrels. I don't know. Wasn't them? We're going to find out in a minute, I'm sure. So there are a lot of people, and I think that's a good reason the medical term and the law, who?
Fireballs.
The fireballs, the one and only hit. There was a group. They call it under the influence. And he's talking about here people who are drinking, who are under influence. Say what you wish. I have a good friend whose wife is taking medical marijuana. She is as bad at MS as you can get at age 45 or 50. I'm cool with that. And when they get these processes purified enough that will help the different type of diseases, I'm fine with that. I mean, God gave us aspirin was originally found from the bark of a tree. Ginseng, if you're a mountain person, anybody know what ginseng is? Yeah. I'm surprised that somebody from Kentucky would know what ginseng is. Of course I'm not. There are a lot of medical things in the world, but it's got to be controlled. But you're going to see a lot of arrest. And a lot of, this is Dwight's prediction, a lot of problems by people getting on this, quote, medical marijuana, which isn't going to be medical for long. Morgan and Morgan is going to break it out, who are going to cause problems to themselves and others. Under the influence. If you're hit by a car and a guy smoking pot, call Morgan and Morgan. Priests and prophets stagger from beer and are befuddled with wine. They reel from beer. They stagger when seeing visions. They stumble when rendering decisions. All the tables are covered with vomit. I've never seen of it about 3 times in the Bible. One's about Jonah. And there's not a spot without filth. They let themselves go. They've lost control of their daily lives or the physical lives of their own world. And do we not, about every 2 or 3 days on the TV at night, Department of Human Resources or Department of Children goes into somebody's house, and while you're eating supper, they give you ugly descriptions of what the house looks like on the inside. Yes, they do. Do children wean from the breast? Do those who are taken from the breast do and do and do and do, rule on rule and rule on rule? There's a little here and a little there. Chaos. What's the going rate now in Venezuela? Is it like a dollar now worth $1 million or $100,000 or something? Chaos. The money just doesn't mean anything. It was so bad in Israel after this period of time. It was so bad in Israel that when Nebuchadnezzar came down to crush them and take them back home, that they were actually selling the heads from dead donkeys, and they were selling bird droppings for food. That's, well, you say, you ever been hungry? None of you have ever said in your life, I'm so hungry I could eat a horse. Huh? Yeah, see, okay. And some of you may have, I don't know. You've eaten a horse?
Yes, during World War II. And they sold it for beef.
But you knew it was different? Well, it wasn't no 3-year-old Kentucky Derby loser. It was probably a 40-year-old plow horse. But it ate just as well, didn't it? We were watching America's Funniest Videos the other day, and the woman had 3 kids on a couch. She said, you know that chicken we just ate? He said, yeah. I said, it's not chicken. What? It's squid. Those three kids had just a cat fit. Anybody ever eat squid or calamari? It's like chewing rubber bands to me, but that's beside the point. There are just some bad things are going to happen in those days of war. Therefore, hear the word of the... Okay, 14. We're getting an answer now, okay? Hear the word of the Lord who scoffs, you scoffers, who rule these people in Jerusalem. Does anybody think that everybody in, what's this, Tallahassee? Is that the state capital? Or downtown Punta Gorda, or downtown Fort Myers, or dare I say Washington, D.C., is straight and honest and just pure as a driven stone, really wants what's best for us? Does anybody think that everybody there is that way? Well, good, we got a bunch of highly intelligent and perceptive people here then. Because they're not! That's what happens with rulers. You boast. You've entered a covenant with death, with grave. You've made an agreement. Then when an overwhelming scourge sweeps by, it cannot touch us. For we've made a lie our refuge, the falsehood our hiding place. We've ignored the truth. It's like the dance band on the Titanic. We've ignored the truth and can't get away with it. Now 16, where I was going to start anyway. So this is what the sovereign says. Sovereign Lord. Talking about God now giving this. See, I lay a stone in Zion. A tested stone. He goes on. A precious cornerstone for a sure foundation. Thought I had it turned off, and I do apologize. Okay. It is now off for sure. Where is Zion? Where is Zion? I didn't hear you. Jerusalem. Pretty important place, will we not agree? He says, I have a stone. Anybody here from or know anything about Bedford, Indiana? What about Bedford, Indiana? Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. I'll feel better now. Tell me something else about Bedford, Indiana. Huh? It's next to the ocean. There's just a lot of ground in between it. Joe, what's important about Bedford, Indiana?
The stone that they build houses
out. There you go. That limestone is very easy to cut into building blocks. As a matter of fact, my father was a mason. Wish I could do the rest of that perspective. That's almost right. If you're in the building business, we call it Bedford stone. And it would be shipped to us and would lay whole houses out of it. Or lay mantles and fireplaces out of it. Very expensive for what had been a big old rock that somebody dug out of the ground. But it was a building stone. Joe, I don't remember. I don't think I saw it. When you all built here, Joseph, you all put a time date marker in the wall somewhere, didn't you? Something like that in it? Well, a true builder does different than that. That's a marker. When you build a place, a house or whatever, you start with one point. This is what we're still doing today. Well, 3 months ago I did it. You decide in this big old field, you're going to put a building. You pick one spot. This is going to be the corner of everything. You lay what's called a cornerstone. And it will come out. And it'll be 6 inches, a foot tall, however you build it. And every measurement you take off that building comes from that perfectly square cornerstone. That goes without saying. That goes without saying. Yes, you're right, Si. You've got it. I mean, now, in the olden days, you put it where you wanted. Today, I pay a pretty substantial fee to surveyors. Trust me. Those guys, for what they do, get a goodly amount of money. You start off this with a straight line, you go this way. You start off this with a straight line, you go that way. On the top, you know where it's all level. That is a cornerstone. Joe. That was their benchmark.
And
all their elevation, everything. Well,
in 69, I lived at Gillsville, Indiana, and the house there was bent for stone, and a hurricane was tornado bound, and had hail balls the size of baseballs, and there are marks on that home yesterday. My wife has seen them and verified.
Well, and what Si said is correct too. There is we have a surveyor, and usually nowadays you need to drive a pin in the ground. Matter of fact, there's still a mark out here in the parking lot that tells where the benchmark of this building, and so many inches above the benchmark, and so it, everything's gone to that. And we found the corners and worked on it. Now he says, so that's the cornerstone. Now let's keep on going. A previous cornerstone for sure foundations, a precious cornerstone for sure foundations. One who trusts will never be dismayed. Did you know, was it 15 or 20 years ago, unless it was the time, it may have been the time when Truman had the White House rebuilt, they found the cornerstone that they didn't know where it was. It was down inside a secondary foundation, quite a few feet below the ground. But When they laid the cornerstone up, and I do think it was George Washington did it. When he set that cornerstone, that's how everything was built. Two main stones are mentioned in the Bible, both referring to Jesus. The first one is the cornerstone.
It's on the floor.
There you go. He hiding from me. The second one, and it's also mentioned. In the olden days, they did not have a great way to expand. There was no structural metal or anything. So they came to what we know as an arch wall. And they would build an arch. And they would be individual blocks, all cut at angles. Okay. Then they would build the corresponding arch. And there would be individual blocks, all cut at angles. And what do they put in the middle? The keystone, or you can also call it a capstone. And that would fit in here, and that actually bear the weight of the two sides of arches. Now, I have been on jobs when my father was a mason. We would build fireplaces like that. One of them I could walk on the inside of. Of course, he cheated. He built a wooden frame, laid the block on top of it, the brick on top of it, then took it out. But that's Christ will also be called the capstone, or the keystone. So two times you hear him talking about the rock, that will be what the references will. He says, see, I lay a stone in Zion, a tested stone, a precious, precious, I do say, cornerstone for the sure foundations. If you do, did anybody go to VBS or little church when you were growing up? You remember the song about building? You remember the building song? Yes, you do. Oh, yes, you do. Yes. The wise man built his house upon the rock. Foolish man built his house upon the sand. And of course, the rain came down, floods came up, the house went splat, the house on the rock stood firm. You want a good foundation. We built a house in Lexington years ago. We just wanted a crawl space. Our crawl space was 9.5 feet deep. The land had been, you remember that, Beck? The land had been filled that we didn't know about. It had been a river and been filled. And before we hit stone, rock, Kentucky limestone, We had to go down that. We had a basement we weren't planning on. Just the way it goes. But you got to have something solid. And that's what he's talking about. I make justice the measuring line, and righteousness the plumb line, the plumb bob that goes up and down. Hell will sweep away your refuge. They lie. The water will overflow your hiding place. The covenant with death will be annulled. They were saying death won't bother us because we've given our life to Satan. But when the overwhelming surge sweeps by, you'll be beaten down on it. And how many have not seen those great floods? Go back to Katrina. Some of you can go back to Charlie if you wish. When the flood started coming in, the house was built on sand. And the walls, the roofs, about everything else went. So that's what he's predicting. Now, God is not talking about house structures. He's talking about lives. And if you build your life around a lie, it will fail. How many of any group, say the Germans, the SS, or the people that follow them, had such a belief in the Fuhrer that they were willing to do anything it took and realize that they were wrong? Those who worked in the concentration camps and the death camps thought they were doing what was right, and they were wrong. So there will be punishment and death and destruction for those who keep in mind the wrong thing to do. And that's what he's pointing out. You've got to go back to the cornerstone. You've got to go back to Christ. The understanding of this message will bring sheer terror. The bed is too short to stretch out. The blanket too narrow to reach around you. You've had it that way. Particularly if you grew up sleeping in the same bed with one of your siblings, and they were a blanket hog. You know what? And they would tuck that underneath their left arm, and they'd roll over, and all of a sudden you was... It's not a guilty conscience, because I don't do that. No. And they would be sleeping in the high and dry. The blanket too near to wrap around you. The Lord will raise up as he did in Mount Perizim. He will rouse himself up in the valley of Gibeon to do his work, his strange work, to perform his task, his alien task. Now stop your mocking, or your change will become heavier. Don't make fun of God, or the punishment against you may be great. The Lord, the God Almighty, has told me of the destruction decree against the whole land. And I guess if you would say, beginning about 70 A.D., I mean, they kept coming back, but about 70 A.D., when Emperor Tiberius came in, or General Tiberius came in, well, that's a trivia question that you should know. James T. Kirk, nobody knows it hardly, his middle name was Tiberius after that general. James T. Tiberius Kirk. When he came in, he just rim-wrecked it. Not a stone was left standing except the foundation of the temple. In Israel, the Israelites as a nation was gone from 70 A.D. to 1948. If I've got a magic marker, we can do some Jethro Boning ciphering. Let's see, 1948, 70 would be a 0, and that would be a 7, that would be 8. 1870 years, there was no nation of Israel because God had wiped them off. And it seems like, mostly maybe somewhat possible, that some of them learned their lesson in that period of time. Now, we've had some of them that still want to do land for peace and want to give away what God has given them the second time through the United Nations and the United States and all. But he's not blessed the ones. Was it Sharon who gave the land for peace and had a stroke and laid paralyzed for how many years, Chuck? 6 years or so? Pat Robertson pointed that out. He got in trouble. Sometimes when you tell the truth, you get in trouble if it's not popular. Stop your mocking, or your chains will become heavy. The Lord Almighty has told me the destruction decreed against the whole land. Listen and hear my voice. This again is Isaiah now talking. Listen and hear my voice. Pay attention to what I say. When the farmer plows for planting, Does he plow continually? Does he keep breaking up ground and harrowing the soil? When he's leveled the surface, does he not sow caraway and scatter cumin? Does he not plant wheat in its place and barley in its plot and smelt in the field? I think smelt is millet. His guide instructs him and teaches him the right way. Caraway cannot be threshed with a sledge, nor can a cartwheel roll over cumin. We still have cumin is now used for arthritis, isn't it? Chondroitin and cumin. You can't beat it with a rod or a stick. Grain must be ground to make bread, so one does not go on threshing it forever. He drives the wheels of the threshing cart over it. The horse will not grind it. Also comes the Lord Almighty, the wonderful master and counselor, and magnificent of the wisdom. In the good times, when it is over, two best days you have in a garden. The day you plant the seed, and the day you eat the seed. You know, there's a long time in between. From beets or beans, it's probably about 56 days. For some of it, it's almost 100 days. But when they would grow their grain, have any of y'all ever been in a wheat field? 4 to 6 foot tall. You've got heads of grain maybe that tall. It's got like whiskers sticking up. And at the end of each one of those whiskers or tentacles is actually a hull that has to be broke out. Now, if I'm not mistaken, that's the part that they grind up and make flax. No, it's not flax. It's I guess that's whole wheat, isn't it? All the ground parts of the refined wheat. But they would take what we would call as a sledge. Rosemary. The sled in Rosebud, Red Rider, Red Flyer, P.F. Flyers, Guild by Association. The sled on rails. They don't know about a sled on rails. This would be a flat piece that the animals draw around, and as the flat weight of it rolled across the husk, it would break it loose. Or they would make a big wheel, instead of a carriage wheel, a foot, 2 foot wide wheel on the middle. And it would stick in, and as the horse walked around, or the donkey walked around, whatever, it would roll over it and break that husk.
Big stone.
Now, I'm talking about grinding. I'm talking about breaking off the husk. Now, we use grinding stones after that. So, there's got to be a process. But when the time comes, don't keep plowing the field. Gather the harvest. And Isaiah says when God gets ready, he's going to gather the harvest. Now, Isaiah is about 700 B.C., give or take. It's been 2,700 years since then. God's just not ready yet. But when he will, he will. Wonderful counselor and magnificent in wisdom. So what he's saying is God will get his children and they will get their reward. And there are plans for those who go against him. The trial of Nuremberg. Can anybody remember the trial of Nuremberg? There were several. I was thinking Cagney, but it's not Cagney. Who played the Chief Justice? Thank you very much. Spencer Tracy. And the trial of Nuremberg was basically against the leadership of the Nazi and the extermination program. And they continue to say, but that's what we were told to do, that's what we were told to do. And of course the decision was in a dramatic ending, but it was wrong. And you should have rebelled. And Simon Wiesenberg and that group of the Nazi chasers pretty much got them all that they could. They figured most of them are dead by now. If they weren't by force, they were done by age. Woe to you, Ariel. Ariel, the city where David settled. Add year to year and let your cycle of festivals go on. Festivals, 4 festivals a year in a Jewish nation. Keep it going, okay? Yet I will besiege Ariel. She will mourn and lament. She will be to me like an altar hearth. The bottom where the fire would be built. Nothing very to jump around. Ariel, of course, he's referring to the city of Jerusalem itself. Jerusalem does not last. We know it was destroyed by Babylon. It was destroyed by the Assyrians. And it will, of course, be battled by Egypt and destroyed by Rome. So it would fall down and it would be burnt. Now, the main part, the part where the temple was, is controlled by the Muslims. How long will God let that go on? Don't know. But it's burning fire. I will encamp against you all around. I will encircle you with tires. I will set up my siege works against you. A siege. Jerusalem, because it was holy, or maybe because that's why it was, there's a Hinnom Valley over on this side. And we're talking about a valley. That was their city dump, matter of fact. The picture idea that the word is used in the Old Testament for hell comes from this Hinnom Valley, because there was always an internal fire burning. Seol was a fire burning. So where the worm turned. So that was their dump. Matter of fact, one of the gates right here in the Hinnom Valley was called the Dung Gate. Picture that in your mind as you wish. But the rest of it would be like a hill. The valley, of course, would break down. Well, if you've got a fortress on the hill, it is hard to go straight uphill and fight it. If you've got just a plain castle, y'all seen things like not the Golden Arches, the Trojan Horse. If you had a castle, and they had a gate, but up on top these guys were throwing rocks at you, you would come up and you would build a scaffolding, usually on wheels, and it would be rolled up against it, and they could fight you. The way they got the city of starts with a piece where the Jews wouldn't hid, and they killed them all. Who? Say it again. Masada, that's the one. It doesn't start with a P. That's the next letter. The hill was so steep, the Romans just started piling rocks up and built the road so they can get up to it. That's siege works. You get where you can fight them from not a disadvantage of being down below them to advantage of being equal with them. So when he talks about a siege work, that's some kind of a building or material or something that can get you where you're ready to take over. He goes on. Where I was. I will encamp against you. Brought low, you will speak from the ground. Your speech will be, you will mumble out of the dust. Your voice will be ghost-like from the earth. Out of the dust, your speech will whisper. Have you ever woken up from surgery? And it feels like instead of operating on you, they just filled your mouth full of cotton candy and paste. And your mouth is dry and all that kind of stuff. That's what I'm seeing here. And you mumble when you try to speak. That's what you whisper. But your many enemies will become like fine dust, ruthless and hordes like blown chaff. Ray would tell stories about during the Dust Bowl. And he was, I think, in Michigan at that time, but where that dust would start out in California back in the late 20s, the John Steinbeck type of thing, where the dust would come and it would just go through the sides of the walls. And if there was a crack, it would come in and it would be everywhere. That's the picture I see there. Your enemies will become like fine dust, ruthless hordes, like blown chaff. The chaff is what, remember we're talking about grinding the chaff off of the grains? That's what he's talking about there. Suddenly, in an instant, the Lord will, Almighty will come, and thunder, and earthquake, and great noise. What are we talking about now? The end of time, maybe? Thunder? Great noise? Windstorm, a tempest, flames from a devouring fire. Did we not told that the world will be purified by fire eventually? That it will not be by flood? Isaiah's getting it. Then the hordes of all the nations will fight against Israel, will fight against Jerusalem. Jerusalem's going to be there. We might think, and I apologize for those of you who are overly zealous true blues, America is not the most important place in the world to God. We've been very helpful, and as long as we support the Jews, I think we're going to be better off. And as long as we try growing the church and winning souls, that's fine. But the center is in Jerusalem. It's where the final battle is going to be. Armageddon is the plains out in front of Jerusalem. So that's where it's going to happen. They will attack Ariel, Jerusalem. That attack her and her fortress and besiege her will be as in a dream. With a vision in the night, as a hungry man dreams that he's eating and wakes up and found out it's not a pillow, but it was not a marshmallow, but it was a pillow he ate. But he awakens and his hunger remains. Do you ever do that? Wake up hungry? Every day, huh? But or when you dream, do you dream about food? Some of you are non-dreamers. Some people don't dream. I'm dreaming in 3D Technicolor every night. It just happens. I'm serious. But not about food. I got to work on that one. Hungry man dreams that he wakes, he's hungry. Thirsty man dreams that he's drinking, and he wakes faint with his thirst unquenched. So it will be to the hordes of all nations that fight against Mount Zion. Those who try to destroy Jerusalem. This is Isaiah. Dwight didn't say this. But those who think they can destroy Jerusalem in the final battles, they're going to lose. Now, Jerusalem's been defeated more than once. Matter of fact, it was defeated when we think about it because David went in and conquered the Jebusites originally and made it his city. So it's been attacked. But God wasn't on their side when it happened. Now he is. And the attack will not win. Be stunned and amazed and blind yourselves and be sightless. Be drunk, but not from wine. Stagger, but not from beer. For the Lord brought over you a deep sleep. He sealed your eyes, the prophets. He's covered your heads, the seers. There'll be a time in history where the prophets won't see anymore. I think. Dwight personally, I will tell you personally, I think it happens in the last verse of the book of Revelation. I think when he says the end, that is the end. And there's nothing new coming up. It's already been told all he... This is Dwight now. I think I can find you some scriptures. Matter of fact, let's go to one of the scriptures. Go back to Revelation with me. Some of you are already there because you know exactly what I'm going to say. But you can do it anyway just to make me happy. That's Jude. That's not Revelation. Well, I got to find it. It should be. Behold my reward, bless the season. If you're nice, other dogs practice on them. Give you my. That's not it. Whoever's thirsty. You want. Here you go. Verse 18 of chapter 22:18. I love it. I've got it marked in three different color magic markers. That's why I can't tell where it's at. Now this is in black and white. So this is John now. I warn everyone who hears the word of prophecy of this book that if anyone adds anything to them, God will add to him the plagues described in this book. And if anyone takes words away from this book of prophecy, God will take away from him his share of the tree of life. That's pretty serious. That's how we live forever. And in the holy city, which are described in this book, and he testifies these things, says, yes, I am coming, and that's in red. That means Jesus puts his stamp of approval on that. King James actually says the same thing. He was right for a change. Yeah. So in that, and there are, if you come from the background of one of these churches, God bless you, you're here now. But there are groups that have church that claim that they have prophets. Now, I'm not talking about proclaimers like I feel the preachers are. Prophets who have new messages, who have new ideas. Not at all what God says is going to happen. We're not going to finish this chapter today. We're going to buckle down right here and stop at 13. Let me give you 11 and 12. We'll stop at 13, okay? 11. For you, this whole vision is nothing but words sealed in a scroll. Remember, it was sealed in a scroll, could not be opened by anybody except who was intended to. He talks about the scrolls earlier. If you give the scroll to someone who can read it, say to them, read this, please, and he will answer, I can't. Or if you give the scroll to someone who cannot read and say, read this please, he'll say, I don't know how to read. So it's been sealed for only the person it's intended to. Let's pick up next week on 29 verse 13. Thank you very much. Any questions? Si.
Another question, but an extraneous note.
On the
stone being buried and discovered years later. This isn't a stone, but it's an interesting buried item that people can literally go see. In the city of Pittsburgh,